Chapter 51 Distribution Relations and Production Relations. The new value added by the annual newly added labour, and thus also that portion of the annual product in which this value is represented, and which may be drawn out of the total output and separated from it, is thus split into three parts, which assume three different forms of revenue, into forms which express one portion of this value as belonging or falling to the share of the owner of labour power, another portion to the owner of capital, and a third portion to the owner of landed property. These, then, are relations, or forms of distribution, for they express the relations under which the newly produced total value is distributed among the owners of the various production factors. From the common viewpoint, these distribution relations appear as natural relations, as relations arising directly from the nature of all social production, from the laws of human production in general. It cannot indeed be denied that pre-capitalist societies disclose other modes of distribution, but these are interpreted as undeveloped, unperfected, and disguised, not reduced to their purest expression and their highest form, differently shaded modes of the natural distribution relations. The only correct aspect of this conception is, assuming some form of social production to exist, for example, primitive Indian communities, or the more ingeniously developed communism of the Peruvians, a distinction can always be made between that portion of labour whose product is directly consumed individually by the producers and their families, and, aside from the part which is productively consumed, that portion of labour which is invariably surplus labour, whose product serves constantly to satisfy the general social needs, no matter how this surplus product may be divided, and no matter who may function as representative of these social needs. Thus, the identity of the various modes of distribution amounts merely to this. They are identical, if we abstract from their differences and specific forms, and keep in mind only their unity, as distinct from their dissimilarity. A more advanced, more critical mind, however, admits the historically developed character of distribution relations, but nevertheless clings all the more tenaciously to the unchanging character of production relations themselves, arising from human nature, and thus independent of all historical development. On the other hand, scientific analysis of the capitalist mode of production demonstrates the contrary, that it is a mode of production of a special kind, with specific historical features, that, like any other specific mode of production, it presupposes a given level of the social productive forces and their forms of development as its historical precondition, a precondition which is itself the historical result and product of a preceding process, and from which the new mode of production proceeds as its given basis, that the production relations corresponding to this specific, historically determined mode of production, relations which human beings enter into during the process of social life in the creation of their social life, possess a specific historical and transitory character, and finally, that the distribution relations essentially coincident with these production relations are their opposite side, so that both share the same historically transitory character. In the study of distribution relations, the initial point of departure is the alleged fact that the annual product is apportioned among wages, profit, and rent. But if so expressed, it is a misstatement. The product is apportioned on one side to capital, on the other to revenue. One of these revenues, wages, never itself assumes the form of revenue, revenue of the labourer, until after it has first confronted this labourer in the form of capital. The confrontation of produced conditions of labour and of the products of labour generally, as capital, with the direct producers, implies from the outset a definite social character of the material conditions of labour in relation to the labourers, and thereby a definite relationship into which they enter with the owners of the means of production and among themselves during production itself. The transformation of these conditions of labour into capital implies, in turn, the expropriation of the direct producers from the land, and thus a definite form of landed property. If one portion of the product were not transformed into capital, the other would not assume the forms of wages, profit, and rent. On the other hand, if the capitalist mode of production presupposes this definite social form of the conditions of production, so does it reproduce it continually. It produces not merely the material products, but reproduces continually the production relations in which the former are produced, and thereby also the corresponding distribution relations. It may be said, of course, that capital itself, and landed property which it includes as its antithesis, already presupposes a distribution, the expropriation of the labourer from the conditions of labour, the concentration of these conditions in the hands of a minority of individuals, the exclusive ownership of land by other individuals, in short, all the relations which have been described in the part dealing with primitive accumulation. Volume 1, Part 8. But this distribution differs altogether from what is understood by distribution relations when the latter are endowed with a historical character, in contradistinction to production relations. What is meant thereby are the various titles to that portion of the product which goes into individual consumption. The aforementioned distribution relations, on the contrary, are the basis of special social functions performed within the production relations by certain of their agents, as opposed to the direct producers. They imbue the conditions of production themselves and their representatives with a specific social quality. They determine the entire character and the entire movement of production. Capitalist production is distinguished from the outset by two characteristic features. Firstly, it produces its products as commodities. The fact that it produces commodities does not differentiate it from other modes of production, but rather the fact that being a commodity is the dominant and determining characteristic of its products. This implies, first and foremost, that the labourer himself comes forward merely as a seller of commodities, and thus as a free wage labourer, so that labour appears in general as wage labour. In view of what has already been said, it is superfluous to demonstrate anew that the relation between capital and wage labour determines the entire character of the mode of production. The principal agents of this mode of production itself, the capitalist and the wage labourer, are as such merely embodiments, personifications of capital and wage labour, definite social characteristics stamped upon individuals by the process of social production, the products of these definite social production relations. The characteristic, one, of the product as a commodity, and two, of the commodity as a product of capital, already implies all circulation relations, that is, a definite social process through which the products must pass, and in which they assume definite social characteristics. It likewise implies definite relations of the production agents by which the value expansion of their product and its reconversion, either into means of subsistence or into means of production, are determined. But even apart from this, the entire determination of value and the regulation of the total production by value results from the two characteristics of the product as a commodity or of the commodity as a capitalistically produced commodity. In this entirely specific form of value, labour prevails on the one hand solely as social labour. On the other hand, the distribution of this social labour and the mutual supplementing and interchanging of its products, the subordination under and introduction into the social mechanism, are left to the accidental and mutually nullifying motives of individual capitalists. Since these latter confront one another only as commodity owners, and everyone seeks to sell his commodity as dearly as possible, apparently even guided in the regulation of production itself solely by his own free will, the inner law enforces itself only through their competition, their mutual pressure upon each other, whereby the deviations are mutually cancelled. Only as an inner law, vis-à-vis the individual agents as a blind law of nature, does the law of value exert its influence here and maintain the social equilibrium of production amidst its accidental fluctuations. Furthermore, already implicit in the commodity, and even more so in the commodity as a product of capital, is the materialization of the social features of production and the personification of the material foundations of production, which characterize the entire capitalist mode of production. The second distinctive feature of the capitalist mode of production is the production of surplus value as the direct aim and determining motive of production. Capital produces essentially capital, and does so only to the extent that it produces surplus value. Our discussion of relative surplus value shows us, and further in considering the transformation of surplus value into profit, how a mode of production peculiar to the capitalist period is founded hereon, a special form of development of the social productive powers of labour, but confronting the labourer as powers of capital rendered independent, and standing in direct opposition, therefore, to the labourer's own development. Production for value and surplus value implies, as has been shown in the course of our analysis, the constantly operating tendency to reduce the labour time necessary for the production of a commodity, that is, its value, below the actually prevailing social average. The pressure to reduce cost price to its minimum becomes the strongest lever for raising the social productiveness of labour, which, however, appears here only as a continual increase in the productiveness of capital. The authority assumed by the capitalist as the personification of capital in the direct process of production, the social function performed by him in his capacity as manager and ruler of production, is essentially different from the authority exercised on the basis of production by means of slaves, serfs, etc. Whereas, on the basis of capitalist production, the mass of direct producers is confronted by the social character of their production in the form of strictly regulating authority and a social mechanism of the labour process organised as a complete hierarchy, this authority reaching its bearers, however, only as the personification of the conditions of labour in contrast to labour, and not as political or theocratic rulers as under earlier modes of production. Among the bearers of this authority, the capitalists themselves, who confront one another only as commodity owners, there reigns complete anarchy, within which the social interrelations of production assert themselves only as an overwhelming natural law in relation to individual free will. Only because labour pre-exists in the form of wage labour, and the means of production in the form of capital, that is, solely because of this specific social form of these essential production factors, does a part of the value, product, appear as surplus value, and this surplus value as profit, rent, as the gain of the capitalist, as additional available wealth belonging to him. But only because this surplus value thus appears as his profit, do the additional means of production, which are intended for the expansion of reproduction, and which constitute a part of this profit, present themselves as new additional capital, and the expansion of the process of reproduction in general as a process of capitalist accumulation. Although the form of labour as wage labour is decisive for the form of the entire process and the specific mode of production itself, it is not wage labour which determines value. In the determination of value, it is a question of social labour time in general, the quantity of labour which society generally has at its disposal, and whose relative absorption by the various products determines, as it were, their respective social importance. The definite form in which the social labour time prevails as decisive in the determination of the value of commodities is, of course, connected with the form of labour as wage labour, and with the corresponding form of the means of production as capital, insofar as solely on this basis does commodity production become the general form of production. Let us moreover consider the so-called distribution relations themselves. The wage presupposes wage labour, and profit, capital. These definite forms of distribution thus presuppose definite social characteristics of production conditions and definite social relations of production agents. The specific distribution relations are thus merely the expression of the specific historical production relations. And now let us consider profit. This specific form of surplus value is the precondition for the fact that the new creation of means of production takes place in the form of capitalist production, thus a relation dominating reproduction, although it seems to the individual capitalist as if he could in reality consume his entire profit as revenue. However, he thereby meets barriers, even in the form of insurance and reserve funds laws of competition, etc., which hamper him and prove to him, in practice, that profit is not a mere distribution category of the individually consumable product. The entire process of capitalist production is furthermore regulated by the prices of the products. But the regulating prices of production are themselves, in turn, regulated by the equalization of the rate of profit and its corresponding distribution of capital among the various social spheres of production. Profit, then, appears here as the main factor, not of the distribution of products, but of their production itself, as a factor in the distribution of capitals and labour itself among the various spheres of production. The division of profit into profit of enterprise and interest appears as the distribution of the same revenue. But it arises, to begin with, from the development of capital as a self-expanding value, a creator of surplus value, that is, from this specific social form of the prevailing process of production. It evolves credit and credit institutions out of itself, and thereby the form of production. As interest, etc., the ostensible distribution forms enter into the price as determining production factors. Ground rent might seem to be a mere form of distribution, because landed property as such does not perform any, or at least any normal, function in the process of production itself. but the circumstance that, one, rent is limited to the excess above the average profit, and that, two, the landlord is reduced from the manager and master of the process of production and of the entire process of social life to the position of mere lessor of land, usurer in land, and mere collector of rent, is a specific historical result of the capitalist mode of production. The fact that the earth received the form of landed property is a historical precondition for this. The fact that landed property assumes forms which permit the capitalist mode of operation in agriculture is a product of the specific character of this mode of production. The income of the landlord may be called rent, even under other forms of society, but it differs essentially from rent as it appears in this mode of production. The so-called distribution relations, then, correspond to and arise from historically determined specific social forms of the process of production and mutual relations entered into by men in the reproduction process of human life. The historical character of these distribution relations is the historical character of production relations, of which they express merely one aspect. Capitalist distribution differs from those forms of distribution which arise from other modes of production, and every form of distribution disappears with the specific form of production from which it is descended and to which it corresponds. The view which regards only distribution relations as historical, but not production relations, is, on the one hand, solely the view of the initial but still handicapped criticism of bourgeois economy. On the other hand, it rests on the confusion and identification of the process of social production with the simple labour process, such as might even be performed by an abnormally isolated human being without any social assistance. To the extent that the labour process is solely a process between man and nature, its simple elements remain common to all social forms of development. But each specific historical form of this process further develops its material foundations and social forms. Whenever a certain stage of maturity has been reached, the specific historical form is discarded and makes way for a higher one. The moment of arrival of such a crisis is disclosed by the depth and breadth attained by the contradictions and antagonisms between the distribution relations and thus the specific historical form of their corresponding production relations on the one hand, and the productive forces, the production powers, and the development of their agencies on the other hand. A conflict then ensues between the material development of production and its social form. See the work on competition and cooperation, 1832.